In the new book, Skyfaring, author Mark Van Honecker reminds readers and us that air travel remains one of the most remarkable feats of the modern world. For many, flying has become an ordinary part of life and is often associated with frustration, delays and lost luggage and cancellations and all that stuff. Told from the perspective of a British Airways Boeing 747 pilot, Skyfaring takes us on a journey from takeoff to landing and reminds us to appreciate the beauty of flight. The book asks us to reimagine what we, both as pilots and as passengers, are actually doing when we enter the world between departure and discovery. The book is beautiful. It is Skyfaring, A Journey with a Pilot. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Mark Van Honecker to the program this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
I'm very happy to be here. Thank you.
You are a Pittsfield boy, born in Pittsfield.
That's right. I was born in Pittsfield and went to school there. And I went to college in Western Massachusetts, and then I left for England.
And at what point did you decide that you wanted to be a pilot?
Well, I was always really fascinated with airplanes, even when I was a child. My bedroom was filled with model airplanes. I was always asking my parents to take me to air shows. To be a commercial pilot seemed to me like a dream. It seemed like something like being an astronaut. And I think that's partially because we didn't have, you know, if I'd had a neighbor who was an airline pilot, or if one of my parents had been a pilot, I might have come to it sooner. But I didn't have that sort of direct inspiration. So it seemed just like a dream to me. Then I worked in Boston for a few years, and then I decided, you know, I should give this a go. And I thought, you know, you only live once. Why not try to follow your dream? And the rest is.
Where did you go to school?
I went to Amherst College.
Okay, and for flight.
So for flight school, I was accepted onto a program run by British Airways. It's kind of like a training program where they take you from beginning all the way through to a commercial license, and that was based north of Oxford in England. But a lot of our flight training took place in Arizona, where the skies are always clear. And my very first lessons were at Pittsfield Municipal Airport, you know, as a high school student.
So at what point in this journey did you think that you would like to write about what perhaps those of us who fly a fair deal miss in that?
Well, I wanted to the book really has two goals, really. One was to share with passengers some of the things that I see as a pilot and that I was amazed by when I became a pilot. You know, when I was growing up, you could still go into the flight deck during flight. That's something that isn't open to passengers anymore, although we do welcome visitors before a flight or after a flight, but during a flight, obviously, that's not possible now. Mm. And so the book is in a sense what I would show you if you could come up during flight. But the other side is, you know, my friends always make fun of me when I'm checking in for a flight as a passenger, because I always ask for a window seat, and they always, you know, they say, you have six windows at work. Why do you need a window seat now? And, you know, there's a lot of things about flying as a passenger that I really appreciate. And, you know, in just the way that if you were on vacation in a city, you might go sit in a cafe and just because you could had a chance to watch the world go by. Well, you know, to me, the window seat of an airliner, especially a long haul one, is, you know, you are watching the world go by quite literally. And it's just a fascinating experience. Sometimes I think that if planes didn't do anything but take us up and then back to the airport we started from, you know, if the only reason we had planes was to see our world from above, we might, you know, right, appreciate flying as people first did when it first was made possible.
Which we seem to do in a smaller scale, of whether it's a hot air balloon or even a small plane that'll bring us around in a scenic flight, as it were. But yeah, that when you're up that high, you just say, okay, I'm most interested in getting from point A to point B.
There is something special about flying a light aircraft and being lower down to the ground and seeing that scale. But of course, on an airliner, you do see at the beginning and the end of the flight, you do have those moments where you are low to the ground. And then you move into this higher world where you're moving very, very fast at very high altitude. And you move into a kind of abstraction, which is its own kind of wonder, really. Most of my flights depart from London Heathrow, and we often fly to Mexico City from there. It's a very long flight. It's 11 hours. And quite often, I end up right over the Berkshires on that flight. And you think, if you're, you know, I look down at the Berkshires, and all I see are trees for the most part. I mean, it looks basically like a forest. And yet, you know, and on that plane will be a Mexican tourist coming back from a week in London and maybe a British anthropologist heading out to Mexico for some research. And yet they fly over all these places. And of course, when you're on the ground and you look up at those planes flying over you, I think that's its own kind of wonder, which is specific to commercial flying.
You write in the book, you have a chapter in the book entitled Machine, which is basically just what it's like to be in that plane. I mean, that in and of itself is pretty much a miracle.
Yeah, I think the physical shape of planes is I think they're among our most beautiful creations. When I walk through Heathrow and I see, you know, maybe the sun is going down and I look out the window of the terminal and I can see the plane I'm about to get on, and, you know, these enormous wings and this great shape. And I think, you know, the next time I see the sun going down, I'm going to be on the other side of the world. And, you know, planes are sculpted by air. They're a great example of how form follows function. And when we see a plane on the ground, maybe especially when they're on the ground, we really have a sense of the potential of those amazing devices we've made.
I was just talking to my nephew this past weekend, who is a pilot for Continental and has been flying for a decade or so and does long flights and mostly sort of back and forth to Singapore from Los Angeles. One of the things that we started talking about was the schedule, of what the schedule of a pilot is. And I just want you to describe what the schedule of a pilot is, because, as he said, most people look at it and say, you know what, that's a pretty good schedule. whereas pilots will look at it and say, yes, but.
Well, there are aspects of how the scheduling works, which you only appreciate once you've been doing it for a while, I suppose. For example, a three-day trip from London to New York, so a three-day trip would mean you fly out from London to New York, you have a night off in New York, and the next night you fly another airplane back to London and get there in the morning. That's considered a short flight for us, really, on a 747. It's one of our shortest flights. Whereas if I fly to Singapore, one of my best friends from high school is living in Singapore now, and she grew up a few blocks away from me in Pittsfield. And, you know, when I fly to Singapore now, it's a 13 or 14 hour flight. We've got four pilots on board, and then we'll have 2.5 days off there. And that's, you know, it's a chance to explore a city. It's a chance for me and a friend from high school to marvel at how we got from Western Massachusetts to an equatorial city on the far side of the world and just laugh about it. And so those longer trips tend to be more popular because, you just have more chance to enjoy the world that you're flying to.
So, how many days in an average month are you in the air?
Well, that's a tough one. I'm probably working about 20 days a month, but now some of those days I'm leaving at 10 or 11 at night. So essentially, I have a day at home, except that, right, I have to pack and have a long nap before I go to work. And then a lot of those days I'll get back at 4 or 5 in the morning. And then, so I kind of have that day off, but I, of course, have to, you know, I'll end up sleeping till noon before I start to enjoy that.
And we want, I think in general, we as the flying public, we want our pilots well rested and we want them happy, right?
Yes, I'm all for. Everyone should be well rested and happy, including pilots.
Well, that's true, absolutely true. So then, once you're up there, then it seems you can really enjoy the experience. You can enjoy what you are seeing. I mean, of course, there's the mechanics to it, and the tremendous skill that it takes to fly the aircraft that you're flying. But what I love about the book is that you are also able to appreciate what you are seeing and what you're doing on a daily basis.
Flying a 747 is obviously very different from flying a Cessna at Pittsfield Municipal. But one of the things it has in common is that we still have to maintain a lookout. So even when we're over the ocean, you know, hours from land, maybe 20 or 30 minutes flying time from the next other aircraft, we're still looking out. And so especially at night, for example, the cockpit lights are turned down very low. And so we're having still having that experience of the outside world, and while we're maintaining that lookout, we're seeing northern lights and shooting stars. So many shooting stars that you can kind of forget to wish on them. And there's so many wonders up there that they become ordinary. And that was one reason I wanted to write the book, was to remind myself, let alone anyone who might read it, why it's an amazing way to experience the world.
I just finished reading the David McCullough book on the Wright brothers, and it was a whole of how he came to flight. And one of the things that's just amazing reading that book is how quickly it developed, of looking of just in a year of how they were able to go from, you know, working in a bicycle shop to actually flying, and then how just several years later we were using major aircraft in war. Since that time, we have used flight in so many different ways, and it's incredible to think that it really, in the grand scheme of things, hasn't been around that long.
No, it hasn't been around that long. One of my most memorable flights, every pilot will have their favorite flights, and one of my most memorable ones was flying Neil Armstrong on a passenger jet from Munich to London quite a few years ago now, and it was an amazing honor to do that. But one of my favorite stories about the Apollo program is that Armstrong, all of the astronauts were allowed to carry a kit with them to the moon. It was called a personal preference kit. And Armstrong took pieces from the Wright brothers' plane.
Right.
He took a piece of cloth, because that's what planes are made of
right.
back then, and a piece of wood from the propeller. And maybe it was because he was from Ohio and they were from Ohio, but it's he was taking these relics to the moon, and to me that just shows how quickly it's developed. It's been a remarkable ride, really.
So now I want to know about that flight. It was actually something that David McCullough pointed out, that John Glenn, Wilbur and Orville Wright, and Neil Armstrong, all from Ohio, that there's this very strong aeronautical background of the state.
And there are those debates of those license plate wars between Ohio and North Carolina.
Yes, first in flight and so forth. Yeah. So when it comes to a flight like that, I mean, did you talk to him and say, you know, get to a point of where you can have an in-depth discussion as to what it is like to leave Earth?
Well, we didn't actually have a chance to talk to him on that flight. I really wanted to go and say hello, but of course,
we have a job to do.
We have a job to do, and we have, you know, especially on long haul flights. That wasn't a long haul flight, but you know, we have so many celebrities and royalty on board, and if we went and said hello to all of them, we'd probably get in trouble. But I wanted to respect his right to have an ordinary journey. But I would have loved to ask him how he thought of commercial flying or the window seat or light aircraft flying, if he did any in those years. I would have loved to have asked him that.
So let me ask you the question, because you write about it in the book, but I'm curious, as you said, when you're a passenger and you have that window seat, what are you looking at? What do you want to notice? What do you tell yourself, I want to make note of this?
Well, one of the things that I'm most fascinated by when I'm watching the world from a window seat is just the way things are connected. I mean, the way that landscapes move into other ones, and there's so rarely a direct break, and yet between a few minutes of looking out the window, the world changes entirely. We kind of forget that we live on a round planet, and from a commercial airliner, you really, especially if you're on a very long flight, you can really get a sense of how mountain ranges lead to deserts, lead to lakes, lead to irrigation projects, lead to rivers, which lead to oceans. And to listen to pick your favorite music. I'm a big fan of listening to music in the window seat as a passenger. To pick your favorite playlist and open that passenger window, and it's a great space, I think, to meditate on the world. And of course, we're so overconnected now on the ground with email and all that stuff. I think that airplane mode on your phone is a real gift in some ways. It's
that so many of us are find it to be incredibly annoying, and yet it is, isn't it?
Yeah,
having those few moments where you don't have to worry about what's going on in the world. What do you think about the state of, because you write this book from a beautiful place of looking at appreciation and the beauty of flight. But as I mentioned in the introductions, for many of us, there are all those annoyances and so forth. And I assume for you that you have to deal with, you know, the annoyances of just bureaucracy of working for a large company, blah, blah, blah. And far be it from me to make you bite the hand that feeds you. So let me just ask this question of, you know, how do we rise above that? And do you think that there is a possibility to improve upon not technologically perhaps, but improve upon the experience that we offer both pilots and passengers?
Well, there is this, the sort of narrative out there that the glories of aviation peaked in the 20s or maybe the 60s, and it's just been sort of deflating since then. But I think there have been a lot of changes, particularly in the last few years, that reflect a new awareness of the wonder of flight. You know, it wasn't so long ago where you could go into an airport that was maybe built in the 70s where you could get on an airplane without actually seeing the airplane. You know, the terminals were dark, and the airport I'm based at, Heathrow Terminal 5, that was built in 2008, I think, it's basically a box of glass. I mean, it was designed to connect people with the air show that's going on all around them. And you see people, I see people all the time standing at the windows, taking selfies now, you know, taking pictures of their kids in front of the plane that's about to take them across the planet. And that extends to new aircraft as well. The Boeing 787 Dreamliner has these enormous windows. They're much bigger than the windows on a regular airliner. And, you know, Boeing didn't have to do that, but they did it because they want to allow people to enjoy the world. And even better on that airplane, you know, often passengers are trying to sleep even when it's daylight outside because of the way that the sun and planes interact, which is something I tried to describe in the book. And so many people who love the window seat will be familiar with being asked to close their blinds so other people can sleep. Well, on the 787, the blinds dim electrically. And you retain that, the passenger retains that last bit of control over the dimming. So you can still look out the window while other people are trying to sleep. And to me, that's a direct improvement of the experience that passengers have. And because the windows are so big, you can even see out of them. You can see out of them more easily, regardless of where you're sat in the airplane. Even in a middle seat, you have this great experience of the world turning outside the window.
Again, back to my nephew, the pilot, but we were at an air show in Ocean City, Maryland, and there's this awe of just thousands and thousands and thousands of people seeing the Blue Angels and the F-22 Raptor, which, I'm sorry, is one of the coolest things I've ever seen.
It is cool, yeah.
It's just amazing. It strikes me that when you go to these air shows, is there a way that you can kind of retain the awe that you have in what you're seeing? I mean, obviously you don't want the plane doing three, or at least I don't, plane doing the drops and the 360s and the 450 miles an hour or whatever it is. But by the same token, what you're doing, even if you're taking a flight from Philly to Los Angeles, is pretty special.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely amazing. One way to rediscover that charm is really to watch how children look at airplanes. And you know, they see an airplane, and whether it's in the sky or on the ground, and have an intuitive sense, even if they wouldn't put it in these words, of what the plane makes possible. I've got a globe at home. I think globes are underrated. Everyone should have a globe these days.
Absolutely.
Especially kids.
Yeah.
And you know, I even after flying for so many years, before I go on a trip, I will look at the globe and the city on the far side. And another great way to do it is there's an app that I use when I'm a passenger. It's called Wiki Offline, I think, and it's basically all the text of Wikipedia, which is on your phone. As you're flying over places and you can see on the moving map the name of cities, or geographic features, is to look them up and read about them. And it's a great way to sort of, on a transcontinental flight, it's a great way to pass the time and to understand some of the places you're flying over.
Well, the book is fascinating, beautifully written. It is Skyfaring, A Journey with a Pilot. The book is published by Knopf. Mark Van Honecker, thank you very much for spending time with us, and best of luck with the book and with the travels.
Thank you very much.
Great pleasure. Thank you. Again, the title of the book is Skyfaring, A Journey with a Pilot by Mark Van Honecker. It is published by Knopf. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.